Hello, I'm Oliver Wong.
And I'm Morgan Rhodes. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
For the past 6 weeks, we've been celebrating the albums of Women Behaving Boldly.
Yeah, today's episode is the last one in the series, and we're keeping it current by talking about this year's album from Janelle Monáe, Dirty Computer. Yeah. Baby, don't make me spell it out for ya. All of the feelings that I got for ya can be explained. Prolific R&B poet Roger Troutman had this to say about the object of his affection. Could it be your face I see on my computer screen? Need a special girl to share my computer world. I no longer need astrology, thanks to modern technology. Whoever baby is, sounds like she's a prototype. Part arch android, part electric lady, computerized, and elusive, like Janelle Monáe on her latest album, Dirty Computer, released in the spring of this year. With 12 tracks and 2 interludes, a short film attached, double entendre and hidden figures of speech aplenty, what does this album tell us about Janelle Monáe? Is she Prince's sonic progeny, Psy personified, one of Lilith's brood? Is she an ally, a feminist? Is she single? Is she queer? And hell, is it any of our business anyway? Not sure. One thing is clear, though. She's conscious about a lot of things. Racism and sexuality, her influence, her predecessors, and her blackness. There's always a moment in black life when you find yourself in a space where you are sorely underrepresented. And then someone shows up, you exchange a look, and in that moment, it's all good. In some ways, Dirty Computer feels like that, like an acknowledgement. The head nod that when translated means, I see you. A shout out to the voiceless, those struggling with identity, those on the spectrum, those walking in truth, those not quite there yet, those unaware or unconvinced of their magic. Sometimes it reminds me of a girl I used to know. She was willing to bare her whole soul to me, but kept calling me from private numbers. Whatever. Dirty Computer is a heat rock, a pop, soul, electro, funk-filled letter to fans and to the curious, and it's signed, Sincerely Jane.
That's just the way you make me feel.
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 Uh-huh. So good, so good, so fucking real.
Dirty Computer was the pick of our guest today, Evelyn McDonnell. She is an associate professor of English at Loyola Marymount University here in Los Angeles, where she directs their brand new journalism program. And she is a longtime and very prolific music writer. This just scrapes the surface of what she's done, but she's the author of Queens of Noise, which was about the Runaways. She wrote Army of She, which is about Bjork. And she wrote Mama-Rama, which is about her. She is the editor of the Music Matter book series, which will include a forthcoming volume on Karen Carpenter by Karen Tongson, who co-hosts the Pop Rocket podcast here on Max Fun. Evelyn's most recent book, which just came out literally a few weeks ago, is Women Who Rock, a 400-page edited anthology that focuses on over 100 of the most important women in pop music history, written by many of our favorite writers, including both Lene Denise and Ann Powers, both of whom you would have already heard contributing to our Women Behaving Boldly series. Evelyn, welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Evelyn, why did you want to talk about Janelle Monáe and why this album in particular?
I think this is the jam of the year. Mm. This is my favorite album of the year. It's my favorite album in a while. I've liked Janelle Monáe for a while, but this is the one that made me really fall in deeply in love with her. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very appropriate to the theme of this series.
Sure.
Also.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really important album that maybe hasn't gotten as much attention as it should have, and certainly hasn't gotten as much airplay or sales as it should have, and maybe has been a little pigeonholed. So I just wanted to get more exposure.
Pigeonholed where?
Well, she very boldly came out in the process of releasing this album, and obviously of making it, too. I think the day it was released, she also came out in a Rolling Stone cover story. Mm. Came out as pansexual. Mm-hmm. You know, not a big secret to any close observer. But, you know, something she'd been keeping in her pocket a little bit. And so I feel like, you know, any queer artist faces that pigeonhole and has to deal, and this is why they mm-hmm. sometimes don't come out or mm-hmm. take so long to come out. And I think that it somehow the album became about that. And it's about so much more yeah. than that. So yeah. as, you know, Morgan wonderfully said, and I feel like that was a tough act to follow, your wonderful description of her and the album. There's a lot to unpack in this. But also, I think most importantly, it's a really fun album. Yeah. There are some mm-hmm. jams on this album that I just can't not dance to sure. when I'm listening in the car, even if I'm in the car.
Right. Right. What was your introduction to Janelle? Let me say first, mine was Metropolis Suite 1, The Chase.
You're an early adopter.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I heard Sincerely Jane on some now defunct website, and I was so hyped because the website was so obscure, I felt like just me. I was the only person that heard it.
Right.
And I could not wait to play it on the air.
Baby, baby.
And in my mind, I mean, I was clearly delusional at the time, but I thought, like, the masses are going to hear this song. And then I realized, you know, my show was from 3 to 6 a.m. So just, it was just going to be me and my mama. But both of us like Sincerely Jane, okay? And it was a revelation. Mm-hmm. Who is this? What is this? Where did she come from? At the time, there was nothing. No one sounded like that. It was so dramatic and sweeping and big, and I was like, "Who? Oh, wait, what is this R&B? What is this?" And so that was my introduction. What was your?
I remember a friend showing me some of the early videos, and I don't even remember now what they were. And it was also part of an introduction to Wonderland, and someone, it was a publicist, yeah. but not working for the album, but just someone saying, "Oh my gosh, you have to check out what's coming out of ATL. Like, this stuff yeah. is so interesting. This crazy imaginative, you know, Afrofuturism, just wild stuff, and not just about Janelle, but about that whole scene.
Mm-hmm.
So she was on my radar from that. And Arch Android was, I liked most of that album, although it did lose me at
okay.
the end, which is part of why I also wanted, we also talked about just having something very contemporary in terms of Dirty Computer. But I was more of like I really respect her, admire her. And then when the videos for this album started dropping,
my God.
I was just like, what?
Yeah.
yeah. So when I was like, oh, she's going to have her lemonade moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. For so, sure. For sure.
And unfortunately, I hope it's more than a moment.
This speaks partly to that point and one that you were making earlier and around just how Janelle is, to me, an incredibly critically visible artist. But surprisingly, not as commercially successful as I think one might assume, at least one like myself, in terms of I see all my friends raving about her. But then you look at her chart history and it's like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, my introduction to her was probably around the time that she put out Tightrope. And that
right.
was, I think, around 2010.
Mm-hmm.
That song didn't even make the Billboard Top 100, and she's never even had a Top 40 hit. And not that by any means am I suggesting that charting is some validation of quality, but Janelle Monáe to me is someone who is not an obscure artist. She's not like some, you know, B-side only person, but it's striking how little, well, relatively little penetration she's had into the commercial market, given that she's a favorite on award show performances
oh, yeah.
because her live act is so incredible. And I don't know if either of you have a theory as to why she isn't a bigger commercial artist, despite the fact that, again, she's this critical darling, if you will.
The one thing that I always wondered about was, and this may not explain, you know, the lack of the critical success, was I thought Bad Boy was a weird label for her to be on.
To start on, yeah.
yeah.
When I saw sure. that, I was like, is she was on Bad Boy?
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like,
I mean, bless him. Bless him.
Oh,
for
yeah. God bless
her,
him.
But,
yeah. He invented the remix. So I give him, I give Diddy credit for that. Right. But I'm not sure that that's the best fit. in saying that, I don't know what label she belongs on, but Bad Boy seems like an odd fit. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I don't know.
It is weird. But she is, like, we were saying this before, that she's not only is she like a critic's darling, but she's a musician's musician.
Yes. Yes.
Like other
yeah.
musicians love, do love her, whether
right.
it's Diddy or
yeah.
Big Boy or Stevie Wonder.
Right,
or,
right.
You know,
or Prince.
Yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, number one Prince,
yeah.
right? So she's very respected. I mean, you know, I some of it. Well, on the one hand, her albums have been very conceptual, right? There's this
sure.
whole
sure.
story that runs through them, which actually this one kind of steps out of slightly, except that the movie keeps it going, but the album doesn't keep it going so much.
Yeah.
In terms of the whole arch android, this
right.
you know, science fiction, Octavia Butler kind of story. And that's maybe too esoteric. I mean, it's part of what I love about her. And, you know, the Roger Troutman quote, Daphne Brooks, the Yale professor, wrote about Janelle for the book that I edited, Women Who Rock. And I think she has the same experience that, you know, you and I had, that we see ourselves in her, like, as this kind of nerdy,
yeah.
Different woman. You know, I'm not black, but I relate to some of her queerness, like, and I think that's part of what on this album, like some of those parties
yeah.
started to pick that up. I've been at parties like that,
right.
you know, not quite, but
right.
I know those scenes that she's depicting and writing about. So I can really identify with that, but I think some people are afraid to identify with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, she's also got the things that draw us to her can also be strikes against her,
right.
and she's black, she's queer, she's a woman. It's like three strikes are out.
Right. She played with a draw with, you know, her introduction was very much playing with androgyny
yeah.
in a way that
mm-hmm.
I think when men do it, it goes over much better in a lot of ways. But when women do it, not so much,
mm-hmm.
and, which obviously speaks to sort of to entrenched sexism in American culture and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
I do think about this musically, too. And maybe Bruno Mars is not the best comparison because there are key differences between what they do. But both of them, I think, are able to capture, especially post-MJ, post-Prince, they understand how that works, that sound works. And obviously on this album, and we might be talking about this song later, but Make Me Feel is so Princey with a heavy dash of MJ in there as well. And someone like Bruno, who takes hits for the fact that he makes hits from this, but he's incredibly successful with doing something very similar, and Monet seems to be able to channel the same spirit and feel, but Make Me Feel is not charting in the same way that Uptown Funk is.
No.
Again, I don't have an easy explanation for that besides issues of maybe race and gender, but or something else that's in the water that explains it.
I've always made that connection between the two of them, and I've always wondered that also. I mean, they've even had the same haircut at the
yeah. Oh, that's a great point.
At one point, yeah.
They're good friends. Surprisingly, they've never recorded a song together, and like, how is that even possible? They've never collaborated directly on a recording, but
right.
but they're good friends, from what I can tell.
I think one difference that I see is that Janelle Monáe has been pushing out these sort of alter egos from the start.
Mm.
Bruno Mars is Bruno as Bruno Mars does.
Mm.
With Janelle Monáe, we've had Cindy Mayweather, we've had Jane.
Mm-hmm.
We've had on Django Jane Alice,
mm-hmm.
and so it's been. I think it's been hard for people to grasp on, like, which one is you?
Yeah.
Who? How do I get close to you when you're like an android?
But Bowie could do it.
Bowie's
again different era.
Different
gender. Yeah, sure.
And I think R&B has wanted those that classify her in R&B has wanted that accessibility to you. We want to know you. What's
mm-hmm.
your story? And when you've got some sort of apparatus on your head,
well,
and
that's interesting.
You're not Jamiroquai. We're like, wait a minute, girl. Mm. What is this going on here? Do we have a right to feel that way? Probably not. But I think that's been some of the.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get some of the stuff. We didn't get that uniform was actually a shout out to her parents that worked in the service industry.
Mm-hmm.
To some people, they were like, why she got pants on all the time? Why is she wearing the same thing all the time?
Yeah.
I understand it and I respect it, but I think that was a little bit of the disconnect between some of the audiences. Bad Boy probably wanted her to court.
Right.
And who ended up attaching themselves to her like we did.
Mm-hmm. Right,
yeah.
Right.
And if I can just briefly add, I think one of the interesting things that she's said about this album in particular is that it should have been the album that she put out before Arch Android, but she wasn't ready to. She wasn't
right.
ready to confront the stuff within herself. So even though this arrives through a kind of chronology where we can see an evolution of sorts. For her, this was actually the album that she wanted to do but just wasn't ready to do until, you know, 8-10 years into her career. So I thought that was a really interesting point to, mm-hmm. to bring up for her.
And maybe the world wasn't ready. And maybe she was waiting till she thought the water was warm enough for her to be like, okay, I'm queer. Mm. And I don't think people were ready in 2008 mm. for her to do that. Mm. And mm-hmm. probably 2013 she was getting close. But mm-hmm. this year she was like, okay, let me go on ahead and shoot my shot because now the audience is listening and they're more open.
Right. Though I still wonder if it's part of the barrier to it. I've had to teach. I have students. And I had one student last year that was doing a paper for me on Afrofuturism mm-hmm. and music. And I was like, well, you're going to write about Janelle Monáe, right? And he's like, well, I've never actually listened to her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like a very smart kid. Love this kid, you know, was really into great stuff. But, you know, I'm like, how can you not have, if you're interested in this, how can you have not listened to Janelle Monáe? And he then subsequently did and, you know, came to like her very much. But I think he didn't because he didn't relate mm-hmm. because he wasn't, he's a guy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe if we talk a little bit about the Wonderland Art Society, some of the themes that come up in this album will make more sense to people that aren't familiar.
Yeah, you want to drop that background on us?
Sure. And for those that aren't familiar, Wonderland Art Society is a collective of artists. They record separately and together. I would say Janelle Monáe is probably the biggest from the collective, and second is Jadenna.
Mm-hmm.
They are certainly a mix of hip-hop and alternative and futuristic soul. Separate and distinct personalities, but when they get together, it's a thing of beauty. Essentially, they are an art and music collective. And a couple of years ago, that might have been 5 years ago, they put out a statement like, who is Wonderland? And I want to read a little bit of it, okay? They say, we survive on funk. We are inventors. We are watching Steve Jobs the way Berry Gordy watched Henry Ford. We believe in Moore's Law, in time pacing, in micro chunking, etc. We are like a cross between Guy Kawasaki and James Brown.
Wow.
Okay, yeah.
Awesome.
And I think that sums up a lot. I mean, Moore's Law is about computer processors and their abilities increasing over time. So there has been this obsession with computers that keeps coming up. I've wondered if they're courting computers or if they're dodging from computers, and I don't think I have those answers yet, but there is an obsession with computers. I thought, what a weird thing to name your album, Dirty Computer,
mm-hmm.
But I thought it was on brand with Electric and Arch Android. I was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm hoping that her next album is a rap album. Because she's sort of hinted that she has bars. And I'm hoping it's a rap album because she raps in Django Jane and she calls herself Alice. So I hope she calls her next album Go Ask Alice.
But
there's a few raps on the album. And, but one of them isn't on the album, but it's in the motion picture, which is E-Motion Picture, which is another reason
right.
to watch it because there's a rap in Pink that doesn't make the album that's really good.
Mm.
It's a great, like, love rap to another woman. It's incredible. I think it's
will she go that route.
Remember the night when I combed your hair? I hope I didn't freak you out when I stared. I donate my truth to you like I'm rich. The truth is loving got no off switch. So if the walls come tumbling down, and if the ocean really does drown, and if my memories never come back,
we will be back with more of our conversation with music writer Evelyn McDonnell about Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer after a brief word from some of our sibling Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
I'm Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And together, we host a podcast called Still Buffering, where we answer questions like,
why should I not fall asleep first at a slumber party?
How do I be fleek?
Is it okay to break up with someone using emojis?
And sometimes we talk about bugs.
No, we don't. Nope.
Find out the answers to these important questions and many more on Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages.
I am a teenager.
And I was too. Butts, 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 butts.
No.
You change your mind? Over and over again.
How many times has this happened to you?
Oh, man, if only I knew whether it was better to be too hot or too cold, or who the best James Bond was, that girl would have gone out with me.
Now you can with We Got This with Mark and Hal, the podcast from MaximumFun.org every Tuesday.
Hey, Lois, it's Joey. The best James Bond was Daniel Craig, and it's better to be too cold than too hot. Thanks, We Got This with Mark and Hal.
Only on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get fine podcasts.
We are back on Heat Rocks talking about Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer with our guest, Evelyn McDonald. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about sexuality and queerness and Janelle Monáe on this album. There have been a couple of schools of thought around this album. Some folks are like, yes, she finally did it. She's come out. We are here for it. Other people are like, nah, you know, she didn't really come fully out. She's still sort of hiding behind this something. There's still a guardedness, which I sort of tried to allude to in my introduction, mm-hmm. that at times I want to like be like, yes, girl. And other times I'm like, but wait, can I access what you're trying to tell us that you are? And in those ways, she reminds me the most of Prince, who never really said I'm one way or the other, but sort of hinted around. Am I black or white? Am I straight or gay? If I was your girlfriend. And I feel that way about Janelle. This album to me doesn't feel like the great revelation of that. I receive it as I'm still figuring it mm-hmm. out. Am I missing something?
Well, I mean, I think she does slightly hedge her bets, maybe, that she comes out as pansexual, you know, which she doesn't necessarily define. I mean, we have so many different terms
sure.
these days for,
sure.
and which is part of the problem of having these terms is that then what if one day you're pansexual and you're like, oh no, wait, actually I'm genderqueer. No, wait, today I'm non-binary. I'm like,
right.
You know, because we change and we learn and you know, we try different things and
identity
and our
slippery.
Hormones change.
Right.
Yeah,
and fluid. Yeah.
So, I mean, so she does say pansexual. I mean, to me, she's really tapping into a lesbian experience, and even like going old school with some of the iconography and the terms, and mm-hmm. Especially in the video Pink, or just the title Pink has the Y in it, which takes me back to like the 70s and
sure.
Mary Daly and gynecology and the Michigan Women's Music Festival and just spelling women with a Y, right?
Like it's, Ruby Fruit Jungle. Like
yeah.
That, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's a very old school. I think it's a tip of the hat to that. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was like, maybe it was, and maybe part of that is just like code, like which she also had a song called It's Code in a previous album. So, right. So again, if you know the code, you get it. But she's also, it's that whole song. She's, making love to other women.
Sure.
I mean, it's all about women's bodies and it's
sure.
really over the top eroticism, and it's Tessa Thompson.
Sure. Sure. I think there are some people have said, why didn't she just come out as
say she's a lesbian?
Uh-huh.
But
and
maybe she's not.
Maybe she's not. The day that she made that announcement on Twitter, they were saying that searches for pansexual were through the roof, that for the term, because
right.
people were like, yo, what
right.
is that?
You
okay.
like pans?
Right. We're here for you, but yo, what is that? So the searches for that word went up.
I feel like we're veering off into Savage Love territory. Shout out to Dan Savage. I think part of it is if you look at the kind of history around biphobia, it's the idea that you have to pick a side. So
sure.
it's okay if your side is same sex, but mm-hmm. this idea that you could be equally or blended between both for a very long time. And I think for many people still, they can't sit with it. And so mm-hmm. again, it's a binary, right? And I
sure.
think that part of the idea behind pansexual is to acknowledge, number one, that gender and sexuality are on a spectrum rather than just being these two poles. And I think maybe part of what we're speaking to around the ambiguity or why she doesn't just commit in a sense is because we're what's familiar to us is you're either straight or you're gay, but there's not this bothness or
yeah.
across the boardness. And if you think about the number of out artists who identify as being bisexual or pansexual, but basically just not committing to one or the other, I can't actually think of anybody, really. I mean, there are people, there's always been hints around it. So again, we can talk about Prince or Bowie and those aspects. But in terms of really being out and embracing a bi or pansexual identity, that's really rare. And I think partly we don't know how to deal with it because we're, again, we're just used to one of the two options, not something that is third effectively.
Sure. I think she's been honest, at least in some songs on the album, that sometimes she's this and sometimes she's that. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite songs is I Like That.
Sometimes a mystery, sometimes I'm free, depending on my mood, on my attitude. Sometimes I want to roll, but stay at home, walk in contradiction, get some factual and fiction, a little crazy.
She also, you know, came from a deeply Baptist background, and apparently that was very hard for her to come out because of family. And there's the Rolling Stone story. The writer goes to Kansas but actually it ends up being fine. But I think that, you know, we can't underestimate how that kind of upbringing can really make you afraid to come out.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, I grew up in the church, so I know I know all about that. And, you know, in the song, I think it's I'm so afraid, she's saying, I'm sitting writing letters to the church. And it's interesting that what I think is the most love-based song on the album is the one that where she's talking about that she's so afraid.
I'm so afraid. What if I lose? Is what I think to myself. I'm fine in my shell. I'm afraid of it all.
I mean, it's so swoon worthy to me and so romantic. Mm-hmm. But then the message is that there's also a lot of fear there. I feel like there's some struggle there in the freedom that's supposed to be this album. There's a little bit of struggle.
So Morgan mentioned that one of her favorite songs was I Like That. Do you have a fire track off of this album, Evelyn?
I like that.
Yeah. I think this was my favorite as well. So this is one of those cases where all three of us are right on the same page.
Yep.
And Evelyn, I would love to hear what your thoughts on the song, if I can just plug mine real quick. For one, it's the use of voices as the primary melody. I will always love that in a song. I love just the 808 hats, hi-hats on there. But really, one of my favorite things is just the line on the chorus.
Ooh, I'm always left to center and it's right where I belong. I'm the random mind and don't you hear a major song that I like.
Musicological, you have to know a little bit about sort of, you know, minor and major chords. But if you do know, it's such a brilliant line. I love everything about this tune.
I just like the vibe of it. And I like that she's examining her own complexity. Like, I just love everything about the song. And I didn't think this was going to be my favorite. Mm. But it ended up being my favorite. So I'm glad I'm in the same community.
We already talked about Pink. That's definitely.
Yeah.
And also, it's such a song. Interesting musically in a similar way, that it's very about the vocals. There's very little actual instrumentation on that album, and it also has these different parts, and the instrumentation finally breaks in like the rock chorus,
right.
You know, where like it's like sort of they're driving and, you know, they're bouncing.
Love it.
Yeah.
Keep it funky, touch your top and let it down.
Evelyn, you were mentioning before we started taping that there's an Aerosmith connection with this song.
Yeah, I just figured that out yesterday, as a matter of fact, when I was doing some research. And so there's an Aerosmith song called Pink with an I, as opposed to the Y, as Janelle spells it, I think it's from 99, that actually had a really weird but interesting video and had the same line of going pink is something.
Yeah.
And it was actually also an ode to women.
Steven Tyler wearing vagina pants in that video as well?
Pretty much. Actually, there's There's weird. That, well, they do this weird like mapping of him onto different of different members of Aerosmith onto different bodies, actually. So it's a very unusual video. I don't know who directed that. So
shout out.
Pink, it's my new obsession. Yeah, pink, it's not even a question. Pink on the lips of your lover.
And this might be a sleeper jam, but another one of my favorites is Django Jane. I love the swag of Django Jane. I love that she's rapping. Like, I love I love her bars. I love that she's talking about revolution. I love that she's talking about black girl magic. It's just so confident. The video, she's on a throne. Like, yo, she's like a queen. And I love Janelle Monáe when she's shouting, calling people out and calling stuff out. That's one of my favorite songs on there.
Kept us in the back of the store. We ain't hitting no more. Moonlit nigga, lit nigga. Already got the Oscar for the Casa. Running down Grammys with the family. Probably give a Tony to the homies. Probably get an Emmy dedicated to the highly melanated.
Evelyn, do you have a sleeper jam off of here?
I would say Screwed, actually.
Oh, okay.
Which is features Zoe Kravitz, which is interesting because when I was listening to Electric Lady, her previous album, I was thinking there's such a Lenny Kravitz influence on this album. I mean, I think she wants to embody that black rock star too, right?
Let's get screwed. I don't care. You fuck the world up now. We'll fuck it all back. Let's get screwed. I don't care. We'll put water in your guns. We'll do it all for fun.
I just like the way she plays with this, like, okay, it's over the top sexuality. It's kind of apocalyptic, which has been the theme of hers with all the Afrofuturism. But we're still going to have a really good time.
Before we forget, because one song that did come into conversation early on that we haven't mentioned in this segment is Make Me Feel.
Mm. That's the one that I can't not dance to when I hear that song. It's such a pop and groove, and it's Prince still with us. I mean, you know, they worked together. He was her mentor. He was collaborating with her on this album. She was sending him the tracks, had her blessing. And so I feel like he speaks through her in that song.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you
make me feel. So good, so fucking real.
Well, there's that guitar that comes in about a minute in, and it's just the most Prince-esque guitar sound you can imagine.
So please don't stop it. You got me right here in your jean pocket. Laying your body on a shag carpet.
It's like it's 1986, and I see Prince with the hot pants on dancing around, and with the sleeve over his face, with that, it's just Princey, and I love it.
And it's also just the Michael, in the way you make me feel.
Absolutely.
And which I can't imagine that the song title didn't occur to her as being related to that.
A shout,
because it's the first thing besides Prince that also made me come to mind. But yeah, it's a perfect kind of mid-80s retro cut, if you will. Yeah.
You know who else I always think of when I listen to Janelle Monáe that we haven't said is Grace Jones.
Mm. Oh.
I see the connection there as them being these style icons, and also being these disco divas. And the Afrofuturism,
and
too.
And the androgyny.
Oh, this is good. I like this.
Yeah.
When I was watching the mini-movie, I was thinking back to our last episode when we had Joan Morgan here talking about Lauryn Hill. And that for Joan, one of the most important things about Lauryn wasn't just that she could spit, that she was a great singer, but was about how physically beautiful she was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure part of that has to do with Joan as a black woman looking at another black woman, and I'm not a black woman. But the thing about Janelle Monáe, and I've thought this since first being introduced to her 8 years ago, is her face, I don't know exactly what it is, but it is like a platonic ideal of symmetrical perfection. And obviously every music video director that she's worked with knows this because there's always these close-ups. She, to me, is almost intimidatingly beautiful. And sure, most pop artists are attractive because they need to be and they're made up to be, but with Janelle, there's something almost transcendent about it. And so I just kept thinking back to Joan's point about Lauren and why that was important and what it symbolizes or what it means or what kind of power it gives. I don't know how to talk about this in regards to Janelle beyond that, but I feel like somehow it's pertinent. And when you're invoking Grace Jones, because Jones's physicality was such a huge part of her, both in terms of how we remember her, but also how she used her own physicality as part of her iconography. And I'm wondering if there's something in here with sort of Janelle Monáe's understanding of herself and sort of how she looks and how to use that.
I was just going to add to it. I think Janelle Monáe is stunning. I have thought that from the beginning. And I think that she is so stunning that the emphasis is her face. Lucky her, because you don't have to consider the rest. You don't have to consider neck down. You don't get stuck on the body. She doesn't have to be sexualized because you're right here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of right here is shrouded in this whatever character she's created, right. In the headgear, in the uniform. I don't think she's hiding. I just think that she's got a lot of beauty and glory and grace in that face. And so you don't have to turn your focus to anything else. And she's also taking back her own body self-consciousness. So she doesn't have to be curvy. Yeah. She's never dressed like that. From the beginning, she came cross-buttoned up. And I think that forced us to look at her face, lucky us, because she's beautiful. But it doesn't feel like it's appealing to anyone's gaze.
It's not Nicki Minaj.
No. It feels like this is me claiming me.
No offense against Nicki Minaj.
No shout out.
A difference. Yeah. There's a difference.
Right.
Let's just be clear. Yeah.
Right. It's not appealing to the male gaze. It's for her and her own self-empowerment. That's how I receive it.
I think it's appealing to the female gaze.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I noticed. Shout out. Don't Judge Me, which is also one of my favorite songs on here.
Actually, I want to bring up, we were talking about songs. I just want to bring up the last track. Americans,
yeah.
Right? So, which is a truncation of Young Americans from David Bowie, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But is also really a statement, again, although in the guise of a really fun dance song, kind of rock dance song, kind of new wave, maybe, and about who we are as a people.
Right.
And how we should be inclusive.
Love me for who I am.
I said this before that, you know, she's a musician's musician, like other musicians love her, and that's evident on this album. I mean, the guest artists are Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Stevie Wonder.
The God. Grimes, who she's collaborated with before. And as I said before, Zoe Kravitz. So, and, you know, she's collaborated with Of Montreal in the past.
Right. And fun, right? Did she...
Yes, of course.
Pharrell's on here.
Pharrell.
Oh, right, I forgot Pharrell. Yep.
Yeah.
Do you feel like she picks her features in a strategic way, or is it just your point is more that you look at the people around her and it's this very eclectic set of, I mean, in some cases like straight up geniuses, right? For talking about Stevie and Brian and et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's reaching big, but I also just, you know, she says for Brian Wilson, she just heard harmonies and she said, okay.
And that's pretty.
When you think harmonies, it's a total Beach Boys harmony. How amazing that he agreed to do it also.
Yeah. I was surprised. I was like, wait, he's still shown to do stuff? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, he's still around. So, I mean, it was, you know, Stevie's been a fan, so that wasn't surprising, but. Right.
One of the other tracks that I think, you know, shows off really her range and is so smooth and beautiful is Don't Judge Me. Partial to this one because my favorite Janelle album is Electric Lady, and I love Dorothy Dandridge Eyes, and I love Look Into My Eyes, and so this song reminds me the most, harkens back to that. I love Dirty Computer, but I think Electric Lady will always be precious to me because of those jams. And I just love when she takes her time and just the build of this song. It's just I mean, I could have, you know, 400 favorites on this album, but certainly that's one of them.
I think there's a celebration of a kind of femininity, particularly on this album, but the the use of falsetto or of higher voices and of pink, obviously. That's really interesting to me, and part of what's unusual for her, because we do associate her with being androgynous and this mannish look, and maybe being more having that kind of rock vibe, which I think she does a variety. I think she's always done a variety, but it's a variety here. So to put my professor hat back on, I teach Helene Cixous, the écriture feminine writing, and the notion, this 1970s advocacy that women must write herself and must write from her body, right? Which is not about like pink, you know, soft pink or being a certain kind of feminine vibe, but just that expressing yourself and that it does come from your body. Yeah. And I think that's what she does on this album.
If you had to describe Dirty Computer in three words, what would you choose?
Crazy, sexy, cool.
Hey! Hey!
Taking it back.
Well, this will do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Evelyn McDonald. Her brand new book is Women Who Rock, literally just came out, so look for it in your favorite bookstore. Thank you for coming. What are you working on now?
I'm trying to get some sleep. Actually, I'm going on a book tour, so I may be coming to a town near you soon, Portland, Seattle.
Where can people find you online to find out where you might be coming?
I'm on Twitter, Evelyn McDonald, very creatively.
It works. It's simple. You have a website.
I do have a website called Populism Blog. It's a WordPress website, so it's still got the WordPress suffix, but yeah, Populism Blog, one word.
Ah, excellent. You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Oliver Wong, and Morgan Rhodes. Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess One of People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup. Heat Rocks is produced by myself, Morgan, and Christian Duenas. Our booking manager is Shana Deloria, and today's episode was engineered and edited by Christian. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher, and exec producer is Jesse Thorne. We are part of the Max Fun family, taping every week live in their studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles, where we're always living our best crazy classic life.
Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage, heatrockspod.com. That's where we'll post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and more goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com.
So folks probably didn't realize this, but we took off the month of October from taping for a much-needed break. So we have 4 weeks' worth of thank yous to give out. And first off, we want to thank our 5-star iTunes reviewers. And as promised, we're going to read some snippets from some of these classics. Why don't we start off with Janet McGinnis?
Thank you to Janet McGinnis, who wrote, quote, "The hosts, wow. Then the music, wow. Add the guests, wow." Thank you, Janet.
Thanks to Tenjay, who wrote, quote, "It's so much fun diving deep on an album from the past," unquote. Tenjay, we agree.
Internet Jones wrote that, quote, "We open you up to music you maybe haven't considered and makes you appreciate your existing favorites even more." Thank you, Internet Jones.
And last but not least, thanks to Ira Joel, who wrote that we are, quote, "one of the only podcasts I listen to at regular speed," unquote. Well, thank you, Ira Joel. I'm glad Morgan and I don't sound like chipmunks in your headphones.
Appreciate you. We also want to thank our social media fans, especially Thurl John. Thank you so much. We want to thank Jason Randall Smith. We want to thank Tasty Quiche, Dunk and Donuts. We want to thank Dr. Corinne Glover. We want to thank Bria Felician, Ryan F. We also want to thank, I want to make sure I get this right, Co-Decapitated Huey Need More Blood. Okay. Thank you. We do so appreciate the tweezies and the retweezies. Nice to see you all.
Nice to see you too, Morgan.
At the time of the taping, we were made aware of the passing of stellar horn player Roy Hargrove, who passed away at the young age of 49 earlier this morning. We hope that you get a chance to get into his discography. Start with the RH Factor. Great album that features Common, Q-Tip, Erykah Badu, and others. Rest in peace, Roy Hargrove.
One last thing. Here's a teaser for next week's episode, which features pop chart guru Chris Malamphy of the Hit Parade podcast talking to us about George Michael's breakout solo album, Faith.
It's an album I have loved since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. I have been fascinated by George Michael's career as a hit maker, wearing my chart nerd hat. And as a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, I mean, he's kind of a self-contained unit. He produced this album, and a lot of what you hear on Faith is him. Mm. There are not a ton of outside musicians. There are no guest vocalists, per se. But really, Faith in and of itself is this sui generis, you know, mass appeal, top 40 pop masterpiece. And I guess that's why it fascinates me.
Yeah.
Hello, Heat Rocks listener. You have found our once-in-the-while hidden track called The Postscript, where we reflect upon this episode, though in this case we are going to reflect upon the series. And given that Evelyn McDonald was the last person who taped for our Women Behaving Boldly series, we've included her for part of this conversation. Evelyn, when we were talking earlier before we started taping, a lot of it is about what makes inclusion, but the things that would get left out that you wish you could kind of find room for. So if we could just really quickly just go around the circle here, and Evelyn, in your case, let's talk about briefly your book, Women Who Rock, which I mentioned at the beginning. You know, 104 profiles of different women who didn't make it that you, if you could do a volume two, would definitely be someone that you would try to get in there.
Mary J. Blige.
Mm.
The other pink, the pink, the artist pink with an eye. I mean, you know, there was supposed to be a Billie Holiday essay that never came through, which, you know, we weren't necessarily doing that much from the past.
Right.
But I would definitely want her, Dinah Washington. I mean, a lot of my favorite, the Slits aren't in it. I stuck them in the intro instead because I just had,
you had to put
give my
there.
Sister Area RIP
in
there. But there's, you know, new, Volume 2, how about Volume 5?
Word up.
And Morgan, if we were to do a Women Behaving Boldly series again, is there an album that you would love to see get, make it into that next series?
Well, she brought up Grace Jones, and we don't have Grace Jones included. Mm. So any Grace Jones album, I would say, because she certainly was behaving boldly for the time and now. Yeah.
I think it'd be great to have a really good convo around Nicki Minaj.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for me, I know of her obviously through just her general presence, but I feel like there's something a lot more to kind of get into in terms of what she represents, the ways in which she shares some similarities with, let's say, 90s artists like Lil' Kim and like Foxy, but in other ways departs completely from that. And I think there's just a lot more to her than I think oftentimes perhaps is she's given credit for. And obviously, we also didn't do any Beyonce in this round.
We didn't do
which
any Beyonce.
We came close. We could have, but
I suggested it.
I know. I want to give credit.
For sure. For sure. We could have gone on. And I think it certainly merits a part two. You know, maybe we have to do another series for the women that got left out of the conversation. I'm pitching for that right now. So, but there's so many.
Morgan, how did you feel about the series? What did you get out of it?
I loved the series. I mean, we couldn't have picked, five more bold behaving women to start with, and there are tons of them, but our starting five was tough. Bette Davis, Madonna, Millie Jackson, Lauryn Hill, Janelle Monáe. We could go on and on. And of course, listeners out there, if you have any suggestions for part two of the series, let us know. We definitely want to sneak Grace Jones in there amongst others. I like the series because it covered different decades.
Yeah.
Because it covered different generations of women. I thought the guests that we had on the show, and I forgot to mention Aretha Franklin.
Of course.
And DJ Lene Denise came in here and broke it down. But I love the series. It just forced me to go back and listen to all the albums that we were talking about, and just reminded me of how progressive and how forward-thinking these women were for the times that they came out in. So I thought it was a great reminder to me of how, you know, dope these women were. And, of course, the title Women Behaving Boldly is the brainchild of Oliver Wong, one of the hottest titles in the game out there. But I loved it. I loved each conversation. Ann Powers talking about, you know, the patchouli scented album that was Madonna's album, and DJ Lene Denise talking about Aretha Franklin and her, you know, phallic references, you know, in her music, and you know, Joan Morgan breaking down what Lauryn Hill meant as a brown skinned black girl coming of age in that time, and the significance of that album in 1998, and of course Millie Jackson, who I always have love for Millie Jackson, but starting out talking about it with you, Oliver, this was just great, because I was like, I didn't think Millie Jackson could get any doper, but to me she got doper after we had the conversation. So
yeah,
love the series.
I do think, you know, we talked a little bit just earlier in this postscript about just what albums we left off that we'd want to revisit, other artists that could have been included. And again, we only had six slots, so we couldn't get in everything, certainly, because there's a lot of women out there. But, you know, obviously Beyonce album would make certain good sense. And I think it's easier for me to think of perhaps slightly more recent artists just because there's been such a, you know, an incredible selection to choose from. But if we had to go back to, let's say, the 60s or 70s, which are decades that we've touched upon, but I feel like it's still, there are a lot of albums, a lot of artists that we could dip into in that era. Who jumps to mind that you think, if we ever do a part two of this, should be in there?
You know, the first group that comes to mind, that would be LaBelle.
Yeah.
Because I'd want to revisit Nona and Patti. Definitely, that's just the first, you know, group that jumped out on me. That we're just wrapping up a conversation. This probably won't air in time, but in thinking about Parliament Funkadelic and how they came out, their costumes, I think about LaBelle too, and how they came out spacey and black and funky. So that for me was bold for the time. So that's first on the list for me.
Right. We have not, I think, sufficiently really delved into Motown. We've touched upon it in talking about Stevie Wonder in the past, but something like Diana Ross and the Supremes would sort of make sense and would give us an entry point into talking about the whole kind of Motown machine and sort of where they fit into that. Certainly, if we wanted to get into more on the funk side, you talk about Lynn Collins, Marva Whitney, kind of all the people who recorded, were produced by James Brown would be big into that.
And even Chaka Khan.
Oh, yeah. Well, we got to do Chaka.
Chaka Khan.
Got to do Chaka.
Yep.
We got to get Chaka in here.
We got
to. I mean, we didn't try Chaka. If you listen to this,
Chaka,
like, come through, man. Hang with us. You're in LA. Come on,
that's
make it.
It happen. That's it. That's it. We've already had an episode about Janet Jackson. So
yeah,
had Rhythm Nation, but no one's coming here to talk about Control. So, or Janet Design of a Decade. Just bring Janet Jackson to the podcast.
No, we've already established, if we're doing another Jackson, it's got to be LaToya.
I'm not mad at that, but because of the fire, the heat rock that was Centipede, I'd rather talk about Rebe.
There you go.
So bring it in, Rebe.
To take this in a different direction, if we wanted to plan another, let's say, 4 to 6 episode miniseries around a different theme, what would be burning for you in terms of you would love the opportunity to kind of explore a mini thematic section, a suite of episodes, if you will, that we could get into?
I think we've touched on it before in passing conversation, but I think one thing that jumps at me right away would be best guest features. Who bodied tracks that they were asked to be on instead of being the person that wrote the tracks? Who stepped in that booth and killed it? What comes to mind to me first is Eminem and Renegade.
Mm.
Huh? 'Cause I thought he bodied that. Some people would say he eclipsed Jay-Z. I'm a Jay-Z fan, so I'm not going to really get into that debate, but I thought M had a great feature. So that would be it. Best features. Busta Rhymes on Scenario. Who stepped in the booth and was like, well, damn, who was that? So that would be one thing that I'd like to talk about.
Yeah. I think actually we probably will be taping maybe a one-off at least episode around that. In terms of like a suite of episodes, you know, one thing that has been a trend amongst our guests, and this is by coincidence, certainly not by our planning, and we've talked about this before on the show, is a lot of people have picked second albums.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be interesting to do a suite of episodes looking at second albums that help. And I think the way to pitch it in a certain way is, rather than it just being like, okay, second albums, really like second albums that represented artistic reinventions. And so looking at artists who are big and sort of what did that second album do for them in terms of turning them from someone with one hit album into someone who created a career partly because of the turn they take on that second effort. So
absolutely. And we also talk a lot about covers. Remember, we kept talking about how Aretha bodied covers.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see us do a series on, it may not be albums, but some of our favorite covers, artists that made a jam that they covered better than the original.
Well, listeners, if you have suggestions for us in terms of what would you like to hear us do a 4-6 episode miniseries on, let us know on the socials. And certainly we will take that in mind, especially if we make it to the 2-year mark. Maybe we'll bring back another miniseries then. That was really fun to work on with you, Morgan.
Likewise. And thank you to all of our guests that sat down with us. We want to shout out again Joy for Betty Davis. We want to shout out Ann Powers for Madonna. We want to shout out each other for Millie Jackson. Absolutely Joan Morgan for Lauryn Hill. And we want to shout out Evelyn for Janelle Monáe and DJ Lene Denise for Aretha Franklin.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.